Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the TakeCast. My name is Davis Matic. You guys can find me on Twitter at Davis Matic. In this episode of the show, we continue season two of the TakeCast, which is myself, Drew Dinkmeyer, and Michael Gallagher breaking down the National Basketball Association, kind of going around the league in terms of rotations, injuries, news and notes, kind of talking about the good teams, the bad teams, breaking some of this big storylines down for DFS, and then also, you know, kind of taking a step back away from DFS and talking about the league as a whole, maybe some ways to profit off of the league in terms of betting. So, you know, just a good conversational NBA podcast. In this episode, we discuss James Harden, the Los Angeles Lakers, the Clippers, Trae Young, Luka Doncic, and more. Of course, I think, a pretty interesting episode of the show, if I do say so myself. We are sponsored by rotoexperts.com. You can get 10% off of the NFL 365 package, and this is actually a great time to do it because you would be able to have it until week 12 of the NFL season next year. A pretty nice time for a renewal, if I do say so myself, and that will only cost you $39.99. We are also, if you want to support the show, you can check us out on Patreon, patreon.com/takecast, that you get bonus episodes of the show, and you can support the show for $5 a month. And now let's go ahead and get into the podcast. All right, everyone, joined, of course, by Drew Dinkmeyer and Michael Gallagher, continuing our series of Monday NBA shows, you know, kind of digging into injuries, news, notes, how things are changing in NBA, overall, DFS, season-long, all the stuff you need to know to keep betting on the NBA. And we are going to start with something that's probably more of a well, this is a real basketball storyline, but also definitely a DFS storyline, is just, Mike, what is going on with Andrew Wiggins? Is Andrew Wiggins now LeBron James? Is this the scenario that we have reached with Andrew Wiggins, the ball handler?
He's better than LeBron. No. Yeah, so I actually dug into this because this is kind of like, especially for season long, a lot of people are like, oh, do I sell high on Wiggins and stuff? And I kind of just, the short answer is yes. So I was like trying to figure out why is he doing so much better, and I was like trying to compare and contrast how he did in like whole sorts of areas. So like his touch time's up, obviously. It's a this is a time with the ball in his hands. It's up to 3.9 from 2.6 last year. Huge jump there. And we always talk about his isolation possessions. Those are actually up too, and he's also been great on those. He's like 78th percentile, up from 42 last year. And then really the biggest areas of improvement have been how he's shot so well on, or shot better on pull-up attempts. He's 10% better on those, effective field goal percentage. He's better on catch and shoot possessions by about 5%. He's actually not as open on his threes. He's only been wide open on 29% of his threes. That's down from 42%. And he's assisted on just 42%, down from 54%. So a lot of these stats, and then also his fast break points have been disappearing. He only has 3.5% of his points in fast break. So, like, all these stats scoring-wise make me think that it's pretty much a fluke. But, like, he's been a much better passer. And, you know, I know everyone in DFS slams him for, you know, being so empty. But his assists are up. His blocks are way up. That's kind of been a weird storyline, too. Partly, I guess, because of the new defense. They really run a lot of four out and cat behind, playing kind of center field on defense. And it's kind of been better. Yeah, he's getting the line more. So a lot of stats are he's really grown. And, you know, he's almost 25 now, so he's starting to hit his prime, I guess. But,
it's crazy that he's 25 because it feels like he's been in the NBA for my entire adult life. Like, yeah. I barely remember what the NBA is like without Andrew Wiggins playing for the Timberwolves.
Yeah, and, I mean, his efficiency is just so much higher. It's 7% higher. And, yeah, we talked about this with Cat a lot, but pace is huge, man. It's 106.4. It's a big jump from where he's been in his career. So, yeah, part system, part a little bit of regression to be expected. But overall, yeah, I think he's really having a good year.
All right, Drew, where are we at? Where are we at with Andrew Wiggins, the point god?
Yeah, so he'll be 25 in February, so he's still not even 25 yet.
That's it. That is crazy.
It's interesting because I think this is one of those cases where there's, you know, clear legitimate skill improvement in terms of the handle and what he's been able to do in terms of executing pick and roll and being a primary initiator a little bit more. Mike mentioned the increase in the assist rate, but I think that's also interesting is that it's come with a big decrease in his turnover rate as well early on. The extra emphasis in terms of the defensive categories and statistics is intriguing because when Wiggins was first kind of brought into the league, a lot of the ideas around Wiggins was that he was going to be like this Paul George type, where he was going to be this elite wing defender because of his physical tools that also could be a shot maker and secondary initiator. And some of those skills are certainly coming together. But like Mike, when I look at the profile in terms of usually when you see these really big jumps in shooting percentage, which look, Wiggins is shooting just under 48% from the field this year. For his career, he's at 44%. In the last 2 years, he had been at 41% and 44%. So you see this really big jump in percentage. Usually the first thing that I like to do is see, okay, where are the shots coming from in terms of facilitating a lot more easier attempts for himself. And in terms of the percentage of shots that are coming from like the 0 to 3 feet range, it's basically the same big jump in that 3 to 10 foot range. So that's been intriguing in terms of being able to separate and get himself a little bit more space, but a huge jump in make percentage from that range, I think is really facilitating stuff. And then he's also shooting really, really well in that 10 to 16 range. And that's a range that when you go from like 35, 36% to 42, 43%, usually that's kind of just a short-term shooting bump. But it's hard with these guys like both Andrew Wiggins and Brandon Ingram, who are guys who had, you know, big pedigrees, have showed individual skill development in terms of their off-season work with the ball handling, with the ability to kind of get where they want on the floor, but also seen huge, huge gaps in where they've been shooting from historical ranges. And so I would say that I'm buying a little bit, but I wouldn't certainly expect this production to continue because I think it's very unlikely that a guy goes from, you know, shooting 41, 42, 43% to shooting 48%.
What if he just needed the ball in his hands though? What if like that was the answer, Drew? What if all along Andrew Wiggins was a point guard and all along Jeff Teague was a shooting guard? What if? That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, what if we'll find out over the course of
Ben McLemore scored 20 points in back-to-back starts for the Houston Rockets, so anything is possible at this point.
That's a little bit of a different scenario when you're able to play with James Harden just facilitating wide-open threes for you over and over and over again. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see. You know, obviously Wiggins has benefited from playing a lot without Teague over the last few weeks in terms of it really
– his rates have gotten a little bit worse in the last two games with Teague. Right. He's been a little bit worse.
That's what you would expect. But I do think it, you know, helps Minnesota give them kind of more diversified looks in general. I think the loss of Tyus Jones in the offseason was kind of a bigger one than a lot of people would think because Tyus Jones was that secondary point guard that led a lot of strong secondary unit performances. And I think they can now stagger Wiggins and Teague a little bit more. But I don't know. I'm not totally kind of buying in all the way. And it'll be really interesting to see how much of this, you know, Wiggins can hold. It's also, you know, a credit to a guy who has often been criticized for how much he's liked basketball and kind of how much work he's put in because he already got paid. Like he didn't, you know, there's nothing financially for him to gain immediately from making all these big improvements in the off season. But you know, maybe the dude just got kind of fed up and tired of having that reputation.
I'll add one more thing with the Culver Teague thing. So actually the Wiggins, he's extremely better when he's next to Culver. Per 36, he's scoring 32 on 62 true shooting versus 26 on 57 true shooting. And then also the Wolves are better too. They're plus 4.8 net rating with those two without Teague and then minus 1.1 with Teague and Wiggins, no Culver. So I think that kind of makes Kate. So like you said, like Teague, and he actually has looked pretty good, like in the second unit. I think he actually is kind of a fit, and they really do want to kind of jumpstart Culver. Hopefully he could jumpstart himself at the free throw line. I think he's like 9 of 23 or something in his career. Like he's going like full Clint Capella, who missed his first 16 attempts at the line in his career. But it's wild. So definitely the Wolves have been fun, which we kind of knew. We're all cat lovers here, but yeah, it should be fun to see.
This is not on our agenda, but I've bullied Drew enough on this show that I would love for Drew to take his Russell Westbrook makes basketball teams worse victory lap right now because look, man, you're not going to find someone who loves Russell Westbrook more than me. And he's just been bad. He's been so, so brutal for the, he was really good for like 2 weeks, and that performance has not maintained itself.
I mean, the thing about Russ, to kind of start with a positive on Russ, is honestly, I feel like that given some of the early like knee issues that he had in his career and given his playing style, I'm shocked that he was able to kind of get some of those high-end productive seasons out of himself, like over and over again, playing at the ferocity and the pace that he plays at and with the intensity that he plays on a night-in, night-out basis. I think the fact that the Rockets training staff basically immediately upon getting their hands on him was like, oh, early in the season, we're going to need to rest you on back-to-backs, I think is a very, very telling sign of where he might be physically. And I think that's kind of, you know, in Oklahoma City, once they got rid of Paul George, they couldn't afford to do that. They right. just didn't have enough talent to kind of hold that up. And with Houston, they've been able to just kind of, you know James is going to play, you know, 75 games and 36 minutes a night. And they're kind of taking advantage of that. So I do think that Russ's style is very detrimental to overall like winning basketball. And I think some of that is showing up when the Rockets are, you know, a little bit more successful when he's off the floor and not playing. And I think Oklahoma City has probably surprised people with how competent they've been. I think some of that is also due to, you know, picking up Shea and
Shea's so good
and just having a pretty deep team on the whole. But I think to be fair to Russ as well, I'm not entirely sure. I think there's enough signs there that he might not be totally healthy to just totally like rail on him this early in the season. I kind of am interested to see how they.
Dang, man, I gave you the chance to I threw the alley-oop up, it bounced off the backboard, and you're not like, flushing it.
I appreciate it, but here's the thing: like when people are like. Like, you know, in NFL Showdown last night, like Robert Woods gets scratched late, right? And people are like, oh, what is going on? Why is Robert Woods not playing? And then you see like it's a personal reason. And then a bunch of people start speculating. I just don't want to be that guy that's like that's here like railing on Russ. And then you find out he's been playing through like some like knee sprain that he's been dealing with. And like that's some of the reason for like the big performance dips. Not saying that I know that to be the case. I just find it peculiar that a guy who was basically never rested in Oklahoma City and was playing heavy minutes, like as soon as the season starts, the Houston training staff is like, no, we're not playing you on back-to-backs.
Yeah, they're also, when he's off the floor, they have a plus 12 non-net rating. They've been really good without him on the floor.
Yeah.
But, yeah, like he kind of has, like, obviously it's not really his play, but like his style, I think it's been good. Like we've always wanted James Harden to play faster. You know, I love talking about pace every chance I get. And like he's been one of the fastest guys at 30 minutes per game on pace. And yeah, I mean, there's still plus with him on the floor. Obviously, it's because of Harden next to him for a lot of his minutes. But it's not like he's playing like terribly bad, you know. I just think that it's rough. Like for him to lean on his three pointer, and he's, you know, he's shooting 5 a game at 22%. That's just
bad.
So, I mean, even if you're shooting like 30%, you know, you're still going to be 45 effective.
And the free throw shooting the last 2 years.
Yeah, well, that's so weird, man. Like for season long, that's such a big albatross to his fantasy value. And like year in, year out, he was like 80s. Like you look at his career log, he was 85 in 16-17, and then 74, and then 65, and then back up to 69 now. Like it's just crazy how that just suddenly happened. But yeah, to your point, like, I always knock him down because he always has these knee scopes or something to start the season, miss games, and like he doesn't miss games. So like
it's just one of these things. Like if you're a point guard in the modern NBA and you can't make the three and you can't generate a lot of free throw attempts and make free throws, that's a tough path to being a really impactful player in the NBA. Really tough to do that.
And he will get to Paul George in a second, but like Paul George's splits on and off without Westbrook were like pretty stark. Yep. Like where he shot the ball great with Westbrook on the floor. So but they're gonna be fine. I think the Rockets definitely look pretty legit. I mean, they're easily probably a top five team and probably maybe even one or two or three.
The thing that to me that is so impressive about what Houston, some of these front offices that I like when they will continuously swing to just try to pair star players because they have enough confidence in themselves to build out the rest of the roster because they're like, oh yeah, there's enough idiot teams in the NBA that don't understand that Tabo Cephalosha is a really good player, or they just know that there's undervalued guys that they can kind of figure out. And Morey's just always done that. Like, they play really tight rotations under D'Antoni because they don't have like 15 good NBA players, but they usually find really good deals throughout the course of the season. And Tabo's a guy who's always been a very impactful player wherever he's gone. He's a guy that can't handle a lot of minutes anymore, but they did that with like finding Daniel House. They did that with finding like reclamation projects with like Ben McLemore and Austin Rivers, and understanding like if you get these guys to do like one thing, you can make them viable around James Harden. And so I think Morey, you know, they've just done a really, really good job. PJ Tucker was that guy.
Yeah, I was going to say Tucker.
Yeah. That they found, and they were like, yeah, basically this is the glue that kind of keeps everything together alongside the stars. And I love...
And Ben McLemore? Are we not? I mean, Ben McLemore was not good enough to play on the Kings, and he's playing 30 minutes a night for the Rockets. Yeah. Like, this is crazy stuff.
Yeah, it's hard, though, man. Like, I think about a week ago I looked it up. Like, Daniel House has, I think, 95% of his shots at the rim, and then all but one of them, it's like 14, 15 shots, all but one of them have been assisted. Like, that's just so crazy how, like, he's just so based on off Harden. I actually looked this up, too. So, Harden in 2014-15, he led the league in points per game off drives at 8.3. This year he's, like, doubling that at 16 points per game. And then another thing I thought was kind of cool. So, 2 years ago he was at 24% of passing out of drives, but that was up to 31 last year. And this year it's at 39.3. So, it's insane, like, how much he scores off a drive and how much he passes out of a drive. Like, it's just amazing how, like, it's, like, hit. We always compare – we're going to compare Luka and Trey to them in a little bit. But, like, Harden's just – it's his offense. Like, no – like, really hate to be, like, nobody we've ever seen before, but, like, kind of is, you know?
Yeah, I mean, he is the way that James Harden plays is, like, it's like the evolutionary version of Kobe – Michael basketball, where he's super ball dominant. He has the ball every single possession, but instead of ending every single possession with a shot that is or is not efficient, depending on you know, a lot of arguments that people are still having today, those possessions oftentimes it ends with a shot that's efficient 100% of the time, or it ends with an assist. So James Harden, pretty good at basketball. Breaking news on the TakeCast. Yeah. So early returns on the Clippers with Paul George. We've not seen Kawhi and Paul George on the court together yet. We're probably going to be getting that tonight. We are recording this on Monday, November 18th. But they're terrifying. They are so good, Drew. They are so good.
So I was at a wedding this past weekend, so I haven't actually seen Paul George. Like, I haven't watched the games yet. I just, like, was kind of flipping through box scores, and I saw the numbers Paul George was putting up, and I was like, that is insane. How is this dude, right off of missing all this time with, like, no conditioning, getting in there and playing, you know, like 30 to 35 minutes a game? And I was like, oh, wait, what? Wait, he's doing that in 20 minutes a game? He's got a 57 PER through two games. What in the heck is going on? Like, I couldn't believe when I scrolled over the minutes column and saw 20s, when I saw, like, he had like 30, 10, and 7 or whatever. I was like, how? How is that even possible? So I'm kind of anxious to get some time to look through and actually watch some of those last two games, because I don't even understand statistically how it's possible. It looks like something completely out of a video game. And PG, before kind of the shoulder issues developed last season, I thought last year in the first half of the season, I thought he was the MVP of the league. I thought he had played that well. So it's really exciting to see that potential come back with, like, healthy shoulders and feeling good and seeing, like, what he can do, especially when you put Kawhi Leonard next to him, to who's, like, improved a lot of the initiation and primary ball handling and pick and roll and stuff. I just think this team is going to be so much fun. Obviously they lose Landry Shamet, and that opens up some more minutes for some of the younger guards to get opportunities as well. I think this will be a revolving door of healthy bodies throughout the course of the year as they try to manage all these veterans. But, man, like, that is super exciting to be able to see Paul George and Kawhi Leonard play together. And I hope it happens tonight. We'll see if Kawhi still needs more time. But PG, man, that's a heck of a debut for the first two games of the season, both in terms of the rates and in terms of the efficiency.
57 points per 36 minutes.
What?
It's just been insane. Some of it is the schedule. Yeah. like two of the worst defenses, including the Hawks, have been just – they've been – their last 60 games, the Hawks are the NBA worst, 122.4 defensive rating. But I think what was kind of weird about Paul George – first, obviously, the free throws are like the headline. Like 30% of his points are from the stripe. Like that's insane. That's like better than Harden stuff. And then besides that, I thought it was really fascinating that 70% of his makes were assisted. That's like super weird for a high volume guy. And it just really goes to him just hitting threes. And I made a joke on, or I guess it's, I don't know if it's a joke or whatever it was, but like, apparently, like his shoulder surgeon is like the next Dr. James Andrews, of course, the Drew Brees. You know, like the guy just doesn't miss right now. We always knew he was a great shooter, but yeah, he just has been just clicking on all cylinders, getting great looks at the basket. And then after the first game, Doc Rivers was—he said he was quote shocked how fast Paul George picked up the offense because they weren't really running any practice stuff with him. They were running skeletons and all this and that. And he's like, I could not believe how fast he picked everything up. And he said his defense still needed some work, but it's just insane. And then he even Paul George even said after the first game that my shoulders feel better than ever. So like apparently maybe those, and then you saw really late last season, his shooting really fell off.
Yeah.
Like you mentioned, like he was MVP caliber, but really after the break, he was like really bad. Not bad, but compared to what he was bad. So yeah, like it's going to be really weird, especially with Kawhi and his mid range shooting and how he's so been more ball dominant and more of a distributor as well. So, like, you think Paul George is going to get a lot of clean looks. And if he keeps knocking down anywhere close to where he's at now, it's insane. Like, I always talk about my 30 usage rate and 62 shooting, 40 usage rate and 81 true shooting.
Yeah.
It's just absurd efficiency. They have a 129 offensive rating with him on the floor over those two games. So, yeah, I mean, they look really good. I mean, it's probably a little bit hyperbole, but, yeah, they definitely look like the best team in the league when they're going to be healthy.
So the exact opposite of the Clippers are, you know, the disappointing teams, the teams that have not been good, the teams that have struggled to score, struggled to defend. Mike, early on in the season, we are about, about 3 weeks in now. Who has been the most disappointing team to you?
I think it's two teams. I was trying to think about this. The first one, I think it's the Nets. I had pretty high hopes on them. A lot of it is Caris LeVert. Even before he got hurt, he was just horrible.
Just not good, yeah.
Missing shots. Yeah, that's my guy, and it was probably my biggest miss on calling breakouts so far. He's been terrible. So hopefully he comes back and clicks. But, yeah, I mean, they're playing fast. They're taking a lot of threes. Joe Harris has been really good. But, I mean, they had a big win against the Bulls without Kyrie, so we'll see how they kind of go. But I expected them to be, you know, fighting for the four spot in the East, and you know they're again, I like their brand of basketball. They're one of the fastest teams in pace. Kyrie has been amazing, but as far as this win loss record goes, I think that they're probably the Clippers one. And then the other one, which we'll talk about in a second, I would say the Hawks too. I thought they would be better than they are. Obviously, their defense has just been destroyed in the last six. But those are probably my two most disappointing if we're going off like win losses.
What about you, Drew?
I would say that I'm shocked that the Nets got a big win without Kyrie. That's very shocking. I would say the team that they beat is the team that I would say is my most disappointing. The Bulls 4-9. I think a lot of people were they were trendy overpick, a team that could contend kind of for that 7th-8th seed in the East. Their point differential has been a lot better than their record suggests. But they've also played a pretty soft schedule. So, you know, they're only a negative 3.3 on point differential. The Hawks are at negative 9.4. So I think the Hawks would have every reason. The Hawks have dealt with a few more injuries, I think. But the Bulls are just, you know, a team that right now, Lauri Markkanen has been awful early in the season. Basically, they've had one guy who's played well, and it's Wendell Carter Jr., who I know we're all big fans of. But I think that's been a really disappointing development for the Bulls that, you know, they felt like this was the year to kind of take that step forward, and they're not doing it. And I think there's you know, a number of reasons that they need to kind of reshape the rotation a little bit. But in the injury or coming into the season knowing that Otto Porter was going to have to be managed is really showing the lack of depth on the roster at the wings, and that they just haven't addressed wings in a while on this team, basically since Jimmy Butler was traded. And it's been a big thing to overcome. I would say they're the team that stands out most to me in terms of, you know, personal disappointment, not only because I root for them, but just because I think a lot of people were excited about them taking that next step forward. And then I would say after them, you know, looking to the Western Conference, I would say, you know, San Antonio has been a pretty big disappointment. 5-8 with a pretty easy schedule early on. You know, they've played 8 of their 13 games at home. They've played like the broken Warriors. They've lost 5 in a row now. I'm really excited about some of the young pieces they have. Like, I really like DeJounte Murray, but some of the older pieces they have, I think, are going to make that offense really, really limited. And so I would say, you know, outside of Golden State, which, you know, I think everybody would say is a huge and shocking disappointment, but if you understood that Stephen Curry and Draymond Green and D'Angelo Russell would be playing as little as they have so far, you would probably understand why we're seeing what we're seeing, as well as Kevon Looney. But I think those are the teams that have probably disappointed me most.
Yeah, it's funny. Like, just with quick Golden State, they, like, we talked about how they have 4 good players, Looney, like, clear 4th best player, and they're, like, all been hurt. I didn't put them in for disappointment because that's why. Like, they're just hurt. But, Davis, we did the over-under, and I was like, I think Bulls under is, like, one of my favorites. I kind of thought they were going to be bad, but just Wendell Carter Jr. has been amazing. Like, his rebounding rate's way higher. His block rate's down, but he just looks so good, especially with a hurt hand, too. He has that splint/wrap thing on his thumb. And it's so annoying how they put him as probable, like, every game. Like, it just makes more work for me. But, Satoransky, actually just today, they were saying Satoransky.
Talking about how he needs to shoot more.
Yes,
but they also just need to play him more in general. Like, they're playing their good players like 25 to 27 minutes a night and wondering why they're not good. And they're playing a lot of their weaker players who the team probably thinks are their best players, you know, into the 30s, and it's a problem. And I know, like, people have been really excited because Kobe White's had some, you know, memorable moments where he's kind of caught fire, but he's generally been what they thought he was going to be. When Boylan kind of early in preseason was like, he's going to have to earn his role. I don't know if there's going to be minutes here for him. And he's playing 25 minutes a night, and I don't think there should be minutes there for him yet. He's shooting 36% from the field. He's attempting a ton of field goal attempts. He's not really distributing the ball as a point guard, which was, you know, one of the concerns kind of when they drafted him, was he's not like a traditional point guard, and he doesn't have quite enough size. I mean, he's tall, but he doesn't have quite enough like bulk to be like a two guard. So he's kind of in this limbo, and they're playing him a ton. Like, Satoransky should be, if they're trying to win, Satoransky should be playing like 32, 33 minutes a night, and Kobe White should probably be around like 16 to 18. And those minutes are a big difference in terms of the team's success. And same thing with like Thad Young, they should be playing Thad Young more than they have been compared to Lauri, because Lauri's been so bad early on if they're trying to win games. But it's just that they're stuck in this weird position of like trying to develop their players while also trying to win games. And I'm not sure, I don't think they're doing a very good job of it.
He loves
I'm shocked the Bulls would mismanage, just their talent, right? But it seems to never happen.
Boylan loves that. Dunn, Archidiakono, and
so
Kobe
bad.
White. Like,
it's so bad.
He loves it.
It's so bad. It is so unbelievably stupid.
Archidiakono is so hard.
It is so unbelievably stupid. It is also so, like, just in general, they should be staggering Zach LaVine into those second unit minutes much more, because he's a guy who can create a lot of offense by himself, and they should be using some of the facilitator guys a little bit more with the Lauri, Wendell Carter Jr. type.
You gotta let Archidiakono cook, Drew. You gotta let him cook. Yeah.
He had that one game, Boylan, when he did that, when he played more marketing at the 5 and then Thad. He, like, shortened the rotation. It was like, 2 Wednesdays ago.
They figured it out a little bit because Cornette got hurt. Like,
And Otto got hurt.
Yeah.
That was the game before Otto got hurt.
They figured it out a little bit with Cornette getting hurt, that they need to basically have a 3-man big rotation with Wendell, Lauri, and Thad, and just play those guys a ton. But they haven't, you know, they just don't have the wing depth to afford the Otto injury, and that's really what's kind of derailed the season.
Yeah, I think Otto's probably going to – oh, man, I feel bad for anyone who has him on their season-long roster, put it that way.
Like, tough, this guy over here.
I think he's going to miss a lot of games. What's up? Do you have him?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's part of the all-injured squad.
I mean, God. Yeah, every player that Drew drafted in the National Fantasy Basketball Championship is the stone worst.
We had a big week, though, because Paul George came back. So we got, Paul George and Harden and Lou Will, and we got Mitch Robinson back now. So we actually have a living, breathing
– a full starting lineup, basically.
Yeah,
you know?
Mitch looked good, by the way. And there was this whole story about – quick tangent – like about how he wanted to play – Fizdale wanted to play Dennis Smith Jr. next to Mitch. And, like, I thought he and Nila Kina looked great in the last game. So, yeah, definitely it's nice. And we saw, like, the game before he got hurt, I think he played 25 and a half minutes or whatever. And because we were like, oh, come on, what's this 20-minute thing? So it's here. What he played on, I want to say 27, 28 minutes in the last game too. So
it's Mitch. Yeah, I'm so upset that I missed it in our premium Daily Roto subscription pods. I've been talking about how all season long I was going to pay a Mitchell Robinson tax, especially on FanDuel, where you get all the extra points for the steals and blocks. I was just going to play Mitchell Robinson 5 to 10% every night, no matter what. And I missed it over the weekend because I wasn't playing because I was at this wedding. And apparently it finally hit at low ownership. Because he's going to have one of those, like, you know, 8 to 10 steal block combo games.
For sure.
That he has, and it's just going to rack up a ton of points at low ownership. But it seems like people are probably going to catch on if he's going to start getting into the mid-20s and upper 20s in minutes.
His block rate's actually way down, and he had said during the preseason how he wanted to try to be conservative, I guess, with going after shot blocks to keep his fouls down. So that's a good change. If he's going to get, you know, what I think in April he played like 32 minutes a game. So if he can get, like Mitch Rob at 32 minutes a game, like insane. Like he has like Drummond like rebound point upside with, you know, mentioned the block. So he could just have some game slate breaking games.
Yeah. So my most disappointing team rolls right into our next question, which is the Spurs are shooting a league low 24.5 three-pointers per 100 possessions. And I think it's now, you know, we have to have the conversation. Is Popovich, is he galaxy braining on us and he actually knows what he's doing? Or has the math of the game, has it just kind of passed the organization and Popovich by? Because if we remember, the Spurs were one of the first teams to do the five out when they would play with Tiago and Tim Duncan. Like they were shooting three pointers. Like those teams that were playing against LeBron's Heat teams, those were amazing 3-point shooting teams. Drew, what is the deal? What's going on, man?
I don't know. I mean maybe this is when everything goes wrong for a contrarian mind, you know, for Pop. Maybe he was contrarian into the math and now he's contrarian against the math and it's a little bit of a challenge. But it's hard to say because the roster just has such limited shooting on it.
It's just a bad roster, really.
I don't know what to do. Like who
the guys, well, they keep drafting guards who can't shoot at all, and that's a problem.
Yeah, the guys who can shoot, I don't think that's as much of a problem because the guys they've drafted in that mold have been very good at getting to the rim. But the challenge is the guys that they have supplemented with in free agency and trades with DeRozan and Aldridge. It's just a weird structure to build entirely. And then you bring in like Rudy Gay in free agency. There's just not shooting on this team. And so like the guys that they would play to like add shooting all are huge defensive issues like Bryn Forbes or Marco Bellinelli or Patty Mills. So they're just stuck. They're stuck trying to play 2 against 3 basically in terms of the scoreboard. And they're stuck that when they try to play for threes, they're basically giving up even more easier looks at the basket on the other end. So I think it's hard to say. I mean, obviously Popovich has influence in the decision making in the front office as well. So it's hard to say, but the roster itself, you know, seeing them so far behind the rest of the league in terms of 3-point shooting is not surprising when you just look up and down that roster.
Marco Bellinelli has been so bad. 31.6 effective field goal percentage is just like, why is he even playing at this point if he can't shoot? So Popovich was asked last week, like, are you going to make a change to the lineup with the whole Trey Lyles thing? And looking at the numbers, like, you would think the move would be to start Rudy Gay over Lyles, but that would really throw the whole rotation out of whack. So I guess I don't know if he's being lazy or whatever he wants to do, but like it seems like that's like the easy move and just kind of figure it out from there. But they're actually – it's not even like they're 29th in catch-and-shoot attempts, and they're at 26th in percentage off those. and they're 27th in pull-ups, but they're second in percentage off those. That's because Bryn Forbes has been pretty good on that shot. But, yeah, like, they have so many things to change on this roster. We all know we want to see Derek White play next to DeJounte Murray, and it's only been for 7 minutes on the whole season. So that's had, like, almost no overlap. But it makes sense. And maybe with how poorly they've played, maybe that's in the cards to try that out, especially, but take Bellinelli out and just give more Derek White minutes. I feel like that's that.
Yeah, I also think that's a development mishap in terms of not only getting those guys time playing together, but I think because they haven't played as much together, the ball has been in White's hands a little bit more to initiate. And I think ultimately, like, their ceiling is going to be more when Derek White, if they can turn Derek White into a really good spot-up shooter that's a secondary initiator. And so, like, I think they're losing a little bit of development time on White, both in terms of playing alongside Murray and building that chemistry, but both in terms of the skill development that will be the most useful for him in their best version of themselves 2 to 3 years down the road.
And a couple other cool stuff. So they have by far the league high in percentage scored off mid-range at 19.4%. There's two teams under 4%. I know you know one, the Rockets. Yeah, can you guess who the other one is under 4%? It's a real random one. Any guesses?
Under 4%
mid-range shots.
I'm just quickly scanning through the standings. I would guess Brooklyn. Oh no, because of Kyrie. No, Kyrie will ruin that for Brooklyn.
I'm trying to think of like the other math team.
Charlotte, really? Charlotte,
I would not have guessed that.
Yeah, I know. Devonte Graham, baller. But yeah, like, they're taking too many mid ranges, man. Like, I know we're all, like, I guess, woke-ish people when it comes to taking threes. I guess we're definitely team threes on this pod. But that's way too high, man. Like, you can't have 20% of your points coming that play or in that shot. They're still 13th in assists, considering they're shooting that many mid range, which is kind of a surprise to me. And then also another shot I like is fast break points, and they're actually 8th. So if they really just extend out their mid ranges, but they can't do that. Like, this is DeMar, top two mid range scorers this decade are on the same team. So, like, that's kind of, they're kind of stuck. They've kind of made their bed that way. But yeah, man, I don't know. I think they're gonna be better. DeJounte kind of cooling off has been a big thing, really, since that Boston blowout on two Saturdays ago. Like, they just haven't been the same. They haven't really popped on tape, and they just – I don't know. I think they'll be better, but I think there's definitely a concern that they don't get in the playoffs.
I mean, I think that's very real. So speaking of one of your most disappointing teams, Mike, Trae Young and Luka Doncic are number 4 and number 5 in the NBA right now in usage rate. So basically, you know, we are in – right now we're in the middle of kind of a shift in terms of the superstars in the NBA. Kevin Durant is not playing. Russell Westbrook is fading out a little bit. Damian Lillard is returning to his career norms in terms of usage rate. We saw CJ McCollum have a big game over the weekend. So, you know, Trae Young and Luka Doncic, I think, in my opinion – these are two of the guys this decade. So if we think of 2020 to 2030, I think that it seems likely that these two guys are going to be, you know, like, you, I could ask my dad, who, like, knows about sports but doesn't really watch the NBA. He probably will know who Trae Young and Luka Doncic are. And I'm wondering if you guys agree with that. You know, I think all of us agree on Doncic, right? I don't think anyone's going to argue against him being a superstar. But do we think that Trae Young has the skills, maybe the durability? I know that there were, you know, some concerns because he's pretty small. Maybe there's some concerns about him not lasting over the long term, kind of similar to Russell Westbrook, actually. So where, Drew, are you at with Trae Young and Luka Doncic right now?
So I think, you know, these two will always be tied together, not only because of the draft class, but because
they're traded for each other.
And so I think that in the context of the way we've evaluated them from the start, you know, I think Trae has certainly closed the gap on Luka. But I still think, you know, I still feel pretty confident that Dallas would take that trade over and over and over again, even giving up that second first round pick, which I believe was the one that turned out to be DeAndre Hunter, or was it the Cam Reddish one?
Reddish.
Okay, so either one doesn't look particularly exciting early on for the Hawks in terms of, like, real difference maker, game changer. And I think Trae, you know, you look at Trae compared to Steph through, you know, Steph's, like, first 2 years in the league. And, you know, Trae's been good, but it's still not even close in terms of efficiency. And Steph, or on in terms of defense, in terms of the ability to generate steals and deflections and different things like that. So I think Trey is very exciting in the same way that Stephen Curry is in terms of offense, but has a long way to go in terms of being that type of impactful player that can overcome some of the size limitations. Because Stephen Curry was, you know, Steph's not a small dude by any means, but was able to overcome some of the defensive challenges by having exceptional hands and then being so freaking efficient offensively that it basically didn't matter, that he was still always going to be adding more points to your team than he was taking away. I think Trey, you know, as Mike alluded to, in terms of their defense as a team really struggling quite a bit, obviously they're a young team with a lot of players that are going to take time to become good defenders in the league. But I think some of the early returns on Trey's defense are not particularly compelling. And I think ultimately for him to be the type of championship level impactful player, he's going to need to be at least competent defensively and maintain and grow some of the efficiency from an offensive perspective that he's had this year. He's made exceptional growth early on this year in terms of his shot choices and in terms of his makes from three, because he got off to such a bad start last year and really turned it on in the second half. But I think to be a championship level impactful player, he's still got a lot of development to go. I think Doncic, you can just see it. You can see it there in so many ways. He obviously has a lot of size benefits that Trey doesn't have in terms of his ability. And I think when you're big enough, if you show a little bit of effort defensively, like, you can kind of get by. And I think Luka can do that. And then offensively, I mean, he's just a wizard, genius level on the heels of, like, you know, Mike, you had said we haven't seen anyone like Harden before. I think we are seeing the next version of Harden in Doncic, that type of player that is just so overwhelmingly skillful that they can be an offense unto themselves.
So real quick, I got attacked on Twitter last night because I said I think Trae Young's passing is underrated. You didn't mention that, so I guess maybe I'm kind of right.
No. Like, so I think I think his passing is great.
Yeah.
I think the challenge is, you know, his passing is, he's so creative with his passing that he still has ball, you know, control and possession issues in terms of the turnovers, and I think that helps facilitate some of the bad defense. So I think he has all of the tools to be a unique offensive weapon. I think the bar is just so high when you're not adding value defensively to be a truly championship level impactful player offensively. He has the talents to do that. He's kind of taken big steps forward this year. I think, unfortunately, it's going to require even more steps forward to be at that level, just given what he is defensively right now.
Yeah, I think they kind of knew that. I mean, when they took DeAndre Hunter where they did, like, that's pretty much just saying, like, hey, we need more perimeter defense help with Trey out there.
Yep.
And then obviously Reddish as well. So who's been, my God, Reddish has been, he's been literally the most inefficient player in the NBA for 24 minutes per game. But he won people a lot of money on Saturday night. He had, like, his last 230, he had like 12 fantasy points. Anyways. But yeah, like you mentioned, like the touch time again. We talked about this, like, I think like 3 or 4 pods ago. Like, it's amazing how much these guys just dominate the ball in just different ways. They're the top two guys in total touch time per game. Trey's first in time per touch, and then Luka's first in total touches at 104. That's 10 more than the league leader last year, which was Jokic. So it's just crazy how much they dominate the ball. But like we said last, like, Luka, man, like, how is, like, I still am just blown away how much more efficient he is. And Carlisle gave him credit to get into the line so much. And
yep,
I mean, he upped his free throw percentage like almost 12%. Like, that's just unheard of, especially with the added volume. He's actually been amazing on scoring off drives this year. He's been like one of the most efficient players in scoring off drives. So he's been really good there. You mentioned he's first in bad pass turnovers per game, Luka. I'm not sure on that, but I think he's up there for those. But it's just so much fun how much these guys have just grown offensively. And like Trey, just, he has so many passes where, like, how does he even see these dudes, you know? And he had, like, I want to say, like, 4 or 5 of them last night where I just, like, what the heck was that? But, they're both just, like you said, 10 years from now, they're definitely, I think they're going to be the, you know, perennial top 2 or 3 guys in scoring, and obviously with the assist leaders as well. So, I think Luka's jump was, I thought it would be, like, another year before he was, like, MVP level.
Before he made the whole jump, but no, it's already here.
Yeah, like, that was it's seriously one of the, I hate hyperbole again, but, like, it's one of the most quickest jumps. I guess, see, I had this, so when Giannis won most improved player, I was like against that because after the break last year, he was the year before his most improved player. He was really, 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 really good.
Right.
Like, Luka after the break last year was a disaster. Like, he wasn't even top 150 in 9 cat leagues because he was so inefficient. So, like, for him just to totally turn it around in, like, every aspect except for, like, really bad passing, but who cares? Like, turnovers are turnovers. It's remarkable. It's seriously like one of the craziest jumps I've ever seen.
It is. It is. I mean, Luka, he's phenomenal, man.
He's 20 years old.
He is.
He's still 20. It's insane. It's just, it's really
remarkable. Imagine when he gets in the gym, Drew.
Yeah, I got to give all the Euro trash talk on the fitness, right? Like,
right.
That's going to be the new theme of the pod every week.
I mean, no, Luka is like, he is like clearly much stronger, faster, and in better shape than he was. I think that was a big explanation for some of his struggles in the latter half of his rookie season. It's just he was not in as good a shape, and it's hard, you know.
Yeah, they even said that that's why they cut his minutes down. Like, yeah, they couldn't play him that many minutes, and they're like, hey, get in shape so we could play you more. So, yeah, and we saw the skinny Luka offseason stuff too. So, definitely credit to kind of the anti Jokic, I'm still infuriated how slow he's playing. Like, just quickly on Jokic, I know we got to get Jokic in here. Like,
yeah, Harris, we got to get some Jokic shock. The pendulum is swinging back the other way, Drew. He's fat again.
Yeah, yeah, dude. No, like, so, like, Barton, Jamal Murray, and Gary Harris, like, their pace without Jokic on the floor is like 15 possessions faster than when with Jokic. Like, it's killing me, man. Like, I love Denver. They're one of my favorite teams to watch, and just playing so slow is just such a downer. Like, I honestly almost put them in disappointment just because of that. I talk about pace every chance I get, and like, just how slow they're playing, it just drives me batty, man. I hate it.
All right. Final thing, last thing of the podcast. The Lakers should be the favorites for the NBA championship. True or false, Drew?
False. I mean, we opened with talking about, you know, Kawhi and PG and what that experience is going to be like. And, you know, it's the same situation. Like, the way that the Clippers are going to be able to get through this regular season, and you might feel good about the Lakers over the Clippers during the course of the regular season, but then you're going to hit, you know, April and May and into June, where the only way the Lakers are going to be able to be successful throughout the course of the regular season is heavy, heavy minutes from LeBron and Anthony Davis. And that is going to take a toll on those guys over the course of the season, whereas the Clippers are so deep as a team, and they seem to show a very clear understanding of where they're trying to get, that those guys are going to be so much fresher. It's going to be basically what San Antonio was doing to the West all those years, where they were so much fresher than everybody else that they were competing against in the playoffs. And I think that's going to be the case for the Clippers. And I think the Clippers should be your favorites to be the NBA champions.
Totally agree. I think they're definitely – the Lakers are definitely in that next rung down.
Yep.
And they're probably at the top of that. But, yeah, like – and if you look at the numbers, this is a little bit skewed because the Golden State game, they played, you know, just that garbage roster and they went off. But LeBron on the floor without AD has actually been an amazing lineup. I think they're like plus 15. But at the reverse of that, when LeBron's off and AD's on, they've been horrible. Yeah, they're minus 10 net rating in that one too. But yeah, it's just their offense is clicking. They're first in shots at the rim per game, second in percentage on shots at the rim. Just great, great. It's just, again, like LeBron's just, you know, really, 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 really good. And for him to be this good this late in his career, it's like the reverse of Luka. Like, how is he still so good this long? Really just everything. Just with how, like, I think his net rating is like one of his highest he's ever had. I think it's like the second highest in his career. Yeah, 14.5. It's second to 2008-09. He was 14.6. It's kind of crazy. Like, he was only in 17-18, he only had a plus 1.6 net rating. Like, that team was just so bad really around him. But yeah. I think that they're definitely the next tier down, and credit to JaVale McGee in that Warriors game. Like, he went berserk.
Cost me a lot of money.
Have some depth, like, because AD, like, he's gonna miss games, man. Like, this shoulder thing is gonna bother him, I think, for a while. And you can really even see when he's like dunking. I don't know if it's like in my head, but like, you see him like dunk and he stretches up and then his arms come down and like his left arm, like, I feel like it just doesn't come down like it's like he's comfortable. So that's gonna. I feel like we're gonna get a lot of like AD to locker room So that's, which is not news at all. But
it's already starting, man. He's already complaining about this thing. It's like, I can't even, like, I don't even want to play this guy, even when
it's so hard.
It's just like, I never want to play him. Like, I am just team play LeBron if they're even close in salary at like all points now, because I cannot deal with the inevitable Anthony Davis in parentheses shoulder goes to the locker room.
I want to quickly hear, Mike, your next tier after the Clippers in terms of NBA.
That's a good one. I haven't really thought about that. But I still believe in Utah. I know they haven't really played well. They lost to Memphis. And I guess if you want to talk Eastern teams.
Yeah, just in terms of overall title contenders.
Yeah, who's your next tier? Teams, yeah, like I think Miami's for real, by the way. Like, oh, my God, Bam Adebayo is like just – Oh,
yeah, Bam taking the next step into being like a top 10 big in the whole league is very big for them.
Yeah, I think the Bucks aren't quite as good as we thought. And you know, it's tough for like Embiid has to stay healthy too. So like that's a risky thing. So I think that second tier, maybe even I don't think you can put Houston in there. But maybe the Lakers are by themselves. Now that I think about it, like I feel like they're definitely of all these teams I mentioned. So maybe they get their own tier too.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think the teams that I expect to be there at the end of the year in terms of when we're recording in May and June, I would expect the Clippers, the Lakers, the Rockets, Milwaukee, Philadelphia, and I would say those are the teams I feel most confident. And then I'd say like the next tier down for me is like Denver, Utah, and then we'll see what else comes out of the East. I'm not super confident in anything in the East yet. I'm excited about Miami's start. I'm excited about how Boston has played early on. But I'm not ready to quite commit and put the teams in that tier yet. And then I would say that, you know, after Denver, Utah, it's kind of the next tier down. I'm still hesitant on Denver, Utah for a full playoff series compared to, like, the Houston – the well, it's hard to say with, like – Milwaukee and Philly are getting such an advantage because I know they're just going to roll through most of the East, is at least the way that I see them kind of getting through the early portions. But Denver and Utah, I feel like they're teams that can put up really, really competitive series against these top teams. But at the end of the day, they're going to lack that guy that they can count on to get bucket after bucket towards the end, unless Jokic is playing really, really aggressively. And Jokic is just a nightmare against Houston. Like, anything against Houston in that pick and roll, he's just dead. Like, that's the one team that he just can't, like, he cannot stay on the floor and be as effective as he is against everyone else in the league.
Yeah. And, well, Donovan Mitchell's been really good, too. Like, his improvement at the rim has gone up. He's been much more of a go-to scorer than he has in the year, which I was surprised. Like, you would think adding Conley would make him more of an assisted guy. He's actually had a higher unassisted percentage on three-pointers this year, which I thought that was going to help him because I think he shot 52% on catch and shoot in his last, like, 32 games last year or something like that. Like, he was just amazing off those. But, yeah, I think that Utah's – they still – like, they have a lot of new parts and stuff, and Conley's been pretty bad for the most part. Again, I mentioned that Memphis loss. Like, they needed that game. They should have definitely won that, but Ja's good. But, it's going to be a lot of fun. So, yeah. Like, I guess now that to answer it, like, I think, do you think Davis that, so you think they're number one though, Davis?
I do. I think that with this Kawhi Leonard knee thing, limiting them enough to the point that I would be very worried about Kawhi Leonard in games, like, you know, it would be game 100, you know, for the Clippers, it'll be game, I don't know, 70, 75 for him. I am worried about Kawhi's knees. I am worried about Lou Williams and Montrezl Harrell as 35 minutes a night defensive players in an NBA Finals series. And you know what? It turns out LeBron just did not care last year. LeBron was just drinking red wine, hanging out, playing in Space Jam, and he cares now. And also, the Lakers are the best defensive team in the NBA by D rating by, like, quite a bit. And yes, of course offense is extremely important, but in the NBA, being able to just put an insane amount of clamps on your opponent, whether that be, you know, whether they're playing Giannis, whether they play the Clippers in the Western Conference Finals, just being able to lock down on defense like that, I think is really impactful and really powerful. So yeah, I do, if I was, you know, if I was making the odds, the Lakers would be the favorites.
And I'll add that game, that play at the end of the Sacramento game when they try to run like a it looked like a handoff, but it was like a decoy play. And then Harry B got a straight clear line to the rim, and AD just blocked him, like just beast mode block. We definitely like underappreciate, I guess, how good Anthony Davis is as a rim protector. We talk about his locker room trips too much to really talk about that enough.
Yeah. So that's where I'm at with Lakers. I do think they are the best team.
I think the consensus would probably be, I think Drew and I, well, I'd probably say 70% of people who know the NBA would probably say Clippers, I feel like.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. Oh, you guys are definitely the sharp side of that, no doubt.
I look forward to your money in May.
I'm just going to bet them now. Well, I get the price. The problem is that they're the Lakers, right? So the price is not even going to be good. Like, if I went to go bet this right now, the price would not reflect the reality that, so it's not even good.
I know exactly what's going to happen. The series line is going to come out in May. Clippers are going to be like -160. Let's do this even money, Davis. You said you think the Lakers are the favorites. You're going to be like, the market says like, let's do a -160. And I'm going to be like, you said even money. And you're going to be like, all right, like -140. And I'm going to be like, fine, -140.
I'm already telling you right now, like if the Clippers are like +180 or +140 in a series price against the Clippers, like I don't have the ability to not bet that, I think.
Bring that money right here. Like when you have that feeling, bring that money right here.
I would probably bet on the Rockets though as underdogs against any of these teams because they deserve it. They are the dog that has been kicked around all the, just for in the playoffs for all of the last 5 years. And they just need to run hot once.
Yeah. They need a Westbrook injury.
All right, that's just mean, dude. That's just, come on. That's disrespectful. That's a good
with minutes though. Like
yeah, they got like, they got Ben McLemore. They're fine.
Yeah, they got McLemore and Austin Rivers. Probably two people that get poked fun at like more than like they're like top 10 like most made fun of players. I feel like on Twitter, right? Like everyone.
Oh, definitely. Rivers is easily the most poked fun of player. Yeah, for sure. All right, guys, that's going to do it for us here at the TakeCast. Make sure to go to dailyroto.com for all of your daily fantasy needs. NBA season getting really underway. The tools, the projections have been great thus far. Make sure to check out all of Michael's content on rotoworld.com. He does all the articles, player news, blurbs, all the stuff for really niche NBA content. And we will be back next week.